Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm very pleased to have back as a guest today George Pelicanos. We'll be discussing The Night Gardener, which has recently been published by Little Brown. And first of all, George, thank you very much for taking time out of a busy schedule to talk with us.
Thank you, Casey.
George, last year when we had you on the show, we were discussing Drama City, which is available in a nice trade paperback now with Little Brown. And congratulations, you got an Edgar nomination for that novel, and the book was very well received. And that had to be gratifying to you because it was a little bit of a different type of novel for you.
Yeah, it was. It was sort of concentrated in one neighborhood and followed the lives of a group of people who were sort of damaged. And, you know, it was a book I wanted to write at the time. It just was all about, you know, having a second chance in life and the fact that it is a long life and you're going to stumble quite a bit. But I don't believe in that old thing about there are no second acts in American lives. In fact, I believe the opposite, and that's really what that book is about.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. And George, with The Night Gardener, which is going to be the featured book of the month on the website this month, Gus Ramone is, the book begins in 1985, and it involves three of the protagonists in the book. And I think The Night Gardener is a very human and humane book. And it really captures the lives of these three policemen. And Gus Ramone ends up being the central character, but T.C. Cook and Doc Holliday are also integral parts of the book. And when you started out in 1985, was Gus Ramone, did you know from the start that he was going to be the primary character throughout the book?
Well, I knew that I was going to go home with him. And uh-huh. I wanted to show a cop's home life and sort of do something different in that I've written quite a bit about kids in the inner city and, you know, who live under bad conditions and don't have parents at home and that kind of thing. And I wanted to write about kids who are pretty much middle class who also have challenges and the challenges of parents raising kids like that in the city and through the school systems and so on. So I knew I was going to focus on that and go home with him quite a bit and by extension maybe sort of humanize the police force in a way that you don't see much in fiction or in film. You often see their obsession and their work habits and so on, but these are people who go home at night.
Mm-hmm.
And they have other lives too.
Yeah, and you said that Gus Ramone, you said he's good police, but he doesn't necessarily see his work as a calling, as T.C. Cook and Doc Holliday do, and that really kind of ends up being his salvation, doesn't it, that he does have a life, he does have a family with children, and he's able to maintain that balance where T.C. Cook, who I thought was a fascinating character, becomes one of the police that just can never quite let go of cases that get stuck in their head.
That's right, and I think that police need that. They need to have a family that completes them in a well-rounded life, because eventually the obsession part of it can take over and really be damaging to them. But having worked with a lot of these homicide police when doing the research in the novel, I found that there were all sorts of different people on the force. And, you know, yes, there were guys who drank too much at night. There were also guys who never drank at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a high rate of divorce, but not really much higher than there is in society in general. So I found a lot of guys who were happily married and were really, you know, what they were thinking about during the day. When you ride around with these people, some of the cell phone calls on the way to the crime scene or on the way to a witness interview have to do with their families. Like, you know, did you check on David this morning? You know, where is he? Is he getting the bus back from school? That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're doing what everybody else is doing out there. They're trying to, they're making a living so that they can take care of their family.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes the Night Gardener, I think that a lot, there's a lot of very good crime fiction being written now, and it's kind of transcended into a very good way to represent society now, because there's some very tender scenes with Ramon and Regina, where Regina reads to Alana and Ramon talks to Diego, and you really capture that home life, that it's almost a grace that he has with his family that the other two don't have, and ends up kind of being his salvation, that at the end of the day he can come home and put his gun in the safe and talk. I really love the relationship between Ramon and his son, because his son's always so afraid that he's going to just get in so much trouble, and he just handles him in such a humane way.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit that, you know, a lot of that stuff is out of my life, and I was ready to write about it. I have two teenage sons and a daughter, and, you know, I was just, there's been a long period where I haven't done anything that's really out of my life or autobiographical, but there was that part that I wanted to sort of write about, because there's all sorts of things written about the right way and the wrong way to parent, and I don't believe that there really is on either extreme or a right or a wrong way. I just think that you deal with the issues every day as they come, and you try to do the best you can. And sometimes it's not out of a book; it's just working on your instincts. And the most important thing is that you're there for them. It's more important than setting rules and being too permissive or too strong or anything like that. I think it's just being there for them, and, mm-hmm. and that's something that he's figured out. This guy Ramon, he's not even that great of a policeman or a super smart guy or anything like that. He makes a lot of mistakes in this book, but the one thing that he does right is when he walks through the door at night, he's a pretty good father.
Yeah, he is. And I laughed out loud, and I told my wife, Tina Rich, on, this is in the galleys, but it was on page 85 or 86, and there's just a beautiful scene where Ramon comes home, and Regina's put on kind of a dowdy-looking outfit and put makeup on and stuff, and you said he was a man as dim and hopeful as any other, and I really like you capture that long-term successful marriage hope, that guys never give up the chance that maybe they're going to get lucky at the end of the evening, no matter what kind of flags we are flown up the flagpole right. When we come home.
She was sending the signal, but the dream is always still alive.
Exactly. I love that. I just laughed out loud when I read that, because I said that just captures it perfectly, and she understood exactly what was going on, and we won't give any of the plot away about what happens. But I like that real nice marital bliss that you convey in The Night Gardener, and I think that's one of the things that differentiating George Pelicanos and Drama City, The Night Gardener, and the things you're writing now than maybe some of the things you did earlier in your career, like King's Sacrament, The Big Blowdown, and some of the other things. There's maturity to the writing, which is just you're becoming better at your craft, obviously.
Thanks. One of the good things about this job is that you're not a rock star, you're not a movie star. There's not that small window where you have to get it done while you're young. And, you can write your whole life. And the really interesting thing about it is the reason you get better, I think, as you get older is because you learn more.
Mm-hmm.
The longer you live, you've learned more. That's the upside of getting older is all the information you've brought in. And, of course, the downside is that you're old.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And, George, if you would, I know when I read The Galleys it wasn't in there, but when I got the final book, there's an in memoriam page that was added. And tell the listeners, if you would, a little bit about the crime in The Night Gardener, and some of the plot details that would be of interest to them, because it does involve the palindrome murders. And what would you like the listeners to know about the plot outline of The Night Gardener?
The book is based on a series of murders in the 70s that occurred here in D.C. called the Freeway Phantom Killings. And the perpetrator had murdered many girls after molesting them, and he had redressed them and then dumped them on the side of the road in various places around the city. And, of course, the fact that it wasn't the actual crime scene, the fact that they had been dressed in new clothes, and also the fact that it was the 70s and there was no DNA evidence to gather. It was very difficult to solve these crimes, and in fact, these crimes were never solved.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that interested me was the fact that there were several police that I, after doing the research, that seemed to have been haunted by these killings, because even though these police were on the case, because they were the best of the group, and they had the highest closure rates and so on, they ended up leaving the force through retirement and that kind of thing, having not closed this biggest case. And it was a very famous case because the victims were all black on the poorer side of town, and there was a lot of talk about the fact that the police weren't working hard enough to solve it because of the nature of the victims. And so that's when I figured that I had a book. I didn't really want to write a serial killer novel, but I wanted to go into the lives of the people who had policed a case like this.
Sure.
And had been damaged by it.
Yeah, and I was, as I was reading it, I was thinking that you made a point in there where Wilkins says that black kids don't commit suicide at the same rate that white kids do. And I was wondering, that kind of fascinated me, where the statistic came from that, because I had not read that before.
It's an actual statistic that there's a great disparity in the suicide rate there was between black kids and white kids. However, in the last 5 or 10 years, you've seen a rise in black teen suicides. And, there's several reasons for this that are theorized. One of them is the access to guns, easy access to guns. The other thing is that, more black kids have moved into the middle class and the upper class, and they are having the same problems, psychological problems, that well-off white kids have had for many years. And so you're seeing a rise in that. And it's something like the notion that, there's no black serial killers. Well, there are occasionally. The D.C. sniper was black, obviously. So it's sort of an idea that's been disproven over time, and you just want to make people aware of it.
Yeah. And then, George, as well, the parents of the children that were murdered, it sounds like you did some research into what happened to them down the road after their kids were murdered, and that was disturbing as well.
Yeah, I think I've written about this before, is that, a crime, or specifically murders, are the idea that they can be solved or that there can be closure is something that I think needs to be addressed, because if you actually look at the families of victims such as this, you see that, and you follow what happened to them, in many instances, it's not positive at all. It haunts them forever, and it breaks up marriages, and it does all these things. So the staple in crime fiction is that at the end of the book, a murder is solved, and the world is set back upright again. But the reality is that it's never set back upright again.
Mm-hmm.
The ripples go out in, not just through the family, but out into the community, and it's a dark current underneath there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're discussing The Night Gardener by George Pelicanos today, published by Little Brown. And George, I would say to the listeners, I think that one of the things you address very well in The Night Gardener is the difficulty of raising kids that are in middle school, and what a critical time in a child's life that is, and how cruel some kids can be to those that are different. And again, without giving any of the plot away, there's a character, and you wrote that his father was one of those guys who demanded his son to be the athlete that he himself never was or could be. And if there's one thing that drives me crazy, I guess, it's watching guys on the sidelines that never won anything, that never accomplished anything, and they expect their sons to be Hall of Fame athletes.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that, having two boys that are athletes and are now up in high school age and playing high school sports and so on, but going back to when they were little kids and seeing these guys making their sons cry on the sidelines and, you know, telling them that they're cowards, why don't you hit somebody and all that. And you look at the guys, and more often than not, you can just tell these are guys that were never anything out on the field themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let them be kids.
Yeah.
I mean, the lessons that you learn in sports are not always about winning. And not always about dominating. You know, it's also about getting hit yourself and falling down and then getting back up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, George, with Washington, D.C., that has become, as all great great writers do, they kind of take on the city and it becomes part of the character. Michael Conley in L.A., James Lee Burke in New Iberia, and now George Pelicanos, Washington, D.C. And I was thinking as I was reading this that Ross Thomas used to write very very brilliantly about Washington, D.C. And for anybody who's never read Ross Thomas, a lot of his books took place in Washington, D.C., and I think are well worth going back and rereading.
Yeah, he's a good writer.
Yeah. And, George, you're getting ready now to The Wire is going to have its fourth season on HBO in September. And how was that experience, and how happy are you with the new season of The Wire?
We're doing something a little bit different. We ended the threat of the Barksdale Bell Empire in the last season, and this year we're going to follow four boys through middle school, and then their lives in the streets and at home at night, and how they navigate all these things. And I think it's the most realistic look at what happens to a group of kids in the city that you've ever seen on television. It's going to be, it's pretty extraordinary what we got.
And when does the series premiere, George?
I believe it's the first week of September on HBO.
Okay, great. And who else wrote on staff with you this year on The Wire?
Well, in addition to the core guys, David Simon and Ed Burns, we got, once again, we got Richard Price and Dennis Lehane to write for us. And, you know, they did great work. I think it's something that hasn't been seen in television really in a long time since the era of the Twilight Zone. You've got pretty good novelists writing for TV, and it shows up in the work.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Well, George, before we go, I want to, again, congratulate you on the Knight Gardner. And to the listeners, a lot of times I have people ask me, you know, is this book really violent? Is it about children because it disturbs you? I'm a parent. And I can say that the Knight Gardner is a book that everyone can read. It doesn't go over the edge. It doesn't go over the top. It's very tastefully written, and I just think that you hit a new level with the Knight Gardner, which is very exciting as a reader to see a writer hit the top of their game like you're doing now.
Thanks, sir. Glad you liked it.
And George, when I was reading The View, they had a list last week of your favorite books, and I like to throw out a little tidbit for listeners. And one of your favorite books of all time, I'm sitting here in my studio looking at a picture of Frederick Exley, and you mentioned The Fan's Notes as being one of your favorites. And I got a kick out of that, so I'd like to put a plug in for A Fan's Notes and find out what it was about A Fan's Notes that really grabbed you and that you liked it so much you mentioned it in that list.
It's hard to describe. I mean, the guy is not a completely likable person. He's what they would call a reprobate, and he's had a lot of bad things happen to him, and also things that he caused to happen. He's a drunk and so on, and also a genius in his own way. And the book is just funny and in a very strange way inspiring, and it lets you into the mind of a real artist. Without all the pretentious things that you usually associate with that, he's a guy's guy.
I think he probably got more advances and more money out of publishers for writing the last two books of his trilogy than any author in history, so he had that going for him, too.
Okay.
George, in conclusion, what are you happiest about with The Night Gardener after Drama City, stylistically, craft-wise? What are you happiest about with The Night Gardener?
I think what you hit upon was the it's a really accurate look at an American family in 2006, and in the context of a crime novel, I was happy to get it in there and make that really the most memorable part of the book. I'm just real pleased with that part of it.
Good. Well, George, again, thank you very much for your time. Best of luck with The Night Gardener. Drama City is available in paperback. The Wire coming out first week of September on HBO. A lot of things going on. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you very much.